All right, so we are holding on Ayin Aleph Amud Beis.
Yeah.
And we're holding on Ayin Aleph Amud Beis, six lines from the top. A line from the top. Yeah. Okay, so we're in the middle of a discussion as follows. Our Mishnah had mentioned that if you have a woman was pregnant and her baby, Rahman Aslan, died in the womb, a midwife reaches in and touches the baby, she becomes Tameh because she touched a dead body. The mother herself is Tahir till the baby comes out. So we were starting to discuss two issues over here. One called that one a concept that you can't become Tameh by touching something using Beis Astarim, which actually we're going to deal with in more detail later on in the Gemara in connection with the next Mishnah, that if you touch something of Tumah with a hidden part of your body, such as, for example, the inside of the mouth or whatever, then you don't become Tameh. You only become Tameh if you touch it using some exposed part of the body, some external part of your body. Second of all, and something more relevant to the sugya over here, is something called Tumah Blua, which is that if you have a source of Tumah that's swallowed up inside a person's body, or as we're going to say, through an animal's body, as long as the person or the animal is alive, then that thing is not metame either. It's not metame the person whose body is inside, and it's not metame anybody outside of it, even, for example, if it is something that is tummy mess, that we would say that's metame other things, but oil, we wouldn't say that, and as we're going to discuss soon in the Gemara also, we're going to get into all the details of that. So we started discussing.
What again?
So again, so tumor blue, where a person swallowed something that's the source of trauma,
yeah.
We say that it being in their stomach is not metame them.
Right.
It's not metame them, and as we're going to see soon, it can't be metame other things as well. So we started
the piece of meat.
Right, so we that was the example that we gave. So we started discussing where we know the concept that tumah blua is not metame. And we
demonstrate.
Well, I'm summarizing what we said in the Gemara, is we showed that you had a case where a person eats a piece of nevela, and then he goes to the mikveh and has head of shemesh. The piece of nevela has not been digested yet. It's still in his stomach, yet it's not metameh. And then we said that how do we know in turn that tahara blua, we said tahara blua ain't metameh, the other way around, sorry, that tumah blua is not metameh, and also tahara blua, if you have something tahar that a person swallowed, it won't become tameh even when the person himself becomes tameh. An example of it being if a person, let's say, swallowed a ring and then went into an oil mess, the ring will not become tameh. And we discussed that we can learn that by a kavah chomer from klei cheres. Klei cheres protect things that are inside them from becoming tamei in an oil mess as long as they have a summit posel or a closed up, a sealed lid on it. So how much more so then, a person should, and whereas klei cheres cannot prevent tumor from going out, something that's inside a klei cheres that's tamei will be metamei everything else around it, despite a summit posel, if you have a kazayis of a mess inside a klei cheres with a summit posel. However, if we're saying that, if we just establish that tumah blua within a person is not metamei, how much more so that the person's body saves the tahar thing, such as the ring inside him, from becoming tamei?
The person is not, like,
the person himself becomes tamei. Fine, but nevertheless, he's not completely closed, but nevertheless, the fact is...
The person, it was
right.
That Keri Cheres can be translated into...
No, but that's what we said. We made a Kabbalah claim. Madach of Keri Cheres does not, even when it has a summoned puzzle, doesn't prevent the tumor from going out. A person doesn't even need to be closed up, and they prevent the tumor from going out, because that's tumor blua. How much more so, then, that if a Kli Cheres, the summoned puzzle, prevents something that's Tahar inside it from becoming Tameh, how much more so a person's body can accomplish the same thing? Okay. So now, Ashkechan Balua Dilamaila. Okay, so far that only explains the case where a person swallowed something through their mouth. Because ultimately we started by proving it using the concept of Tumah Blua. And there the Pasuk had said, if somebody eats from the Nevela of it. So we see that that's considered Balua. How about Dilamata Manola? And how do we know the same thing would apply if it came in from below? Let's say Rashi says, for example, somebody took a thing of tumah, put it inside a straw or some other kind of hollow pipe like that, and stuck it into somebody else from below, derech beitari, through the rectum. And now it's inside his body. It's also considered a tumah blua. It's also not metame. Again, if you were to go to the mikveh and have hair of shemesh, he wouldn't become tummy, despite the fact that you have this piece of nevela inside in his lower body. How do we know that? So the answer is kavachon. When he eats it through his mouth, where eating it through his mouth doesn't digest it. Yes, it goes down to the stomach. The only thing at most that's been done is chewing it. It's not actually digested at that point.
Right.
And yet matzil, yet we're saying that swallowing it through the mouth saves it from being metamehim anymore. It can't be metamehim again once he goes to the mikveh and has head of shemesh. It can't be metamehim. Lamata sha'oitza ikol, so then if it's in the bottom half of his body, which is where food normally gets digested, that's what we're going to talk about. Ena din shematzel, shouldn't it be a kavachomer that also being inside his body saves him from being tamei? So the question is, as you just said, klum oitza ikol lamata elai de maila. You don't have. I mean, the digestion process further down in the body requires that it was swallowed through the mouth first. If you don't swallow it through the mouth, it's not going to go through the digestive system. It's not going to get digested.
Doesn't that depend on the species of animal?
No. Well, here we're talking about a human being.
Oh. Okay.
For then we're going to talk about animals next. But right now we're talking about people.
Okay.
The answer is afilo hochi ikol de lamata ra. Fine, but nevertheless, the fact remains, when you consider how much digestion takes place in the upper half of the body versus the lower half, you'll have to say much more takes place in the lower half. Therefore, even though it's true that eating it is a prerequisite for all of that process to take place, nevertheless, if we're looking at where in the body does ikul take place, primarily it takes place in the lower half of the body. Therefore, not the rectum per se, but nevertheless, once it was stuck into the digestive system, then therefore that's enough for it to be considered tuma blua, because the digestive system in general, especially from the stomach and onward, is basically where digestion takes place. Okay. So therefore, so that would be the din, that even if it was stuck in milamata, it would still be tahor. Haver Tabach, by the way, asked an interesting question. Why did Rashi need to mention that somebody put it inside a straw and then stuck it in? Wouldn't it be the same thing if they stuck it in just by hand? Why bring in the matter of a straw? So Haver Tabach has a question on it. Achronim say that maybe the idea is because that Rashi wants to explain by that, same way as we said before, that when he swallowed it, conceivably he could throw it back up again, and if somebody didn't know it had been inside his body, it would still be edible. Maybe the same thing over here. If somebody stuck it directly in, it would be considered completely inedible, whereas if it was put in through a straw, maybe it could be considered more edible. And nevertheless, we're saying that because it's the place of ikul, therefore it's a yeah. Okay, fine. Ashkechan balua de adam. So it wouldn't be metamehim, right? It's still considered truma blua. Okay. Ashkecha and balua de adam, fine. So that takes care of how we know that if a person swallows something which is metame, that it's not metame once it's swallowed. Balua de behemah manolon. How do we know? The same thing applies to an animal swallowing something. And by the way, all of this only... Why? Because we have to ask. A person and then an animal have different dinim.
It's based on supposedly physiology.
We started saying that it's based on the pasuk says va'oichol menivlasa. That's talking about if a person eats a piece of nevela, we're talking about the tumah that comes to him. Animals don't become tummy. Live animals can't become tummy. The only living creatures that can become tummy are human beings. So we have to ask, how do we know? The same thing applies if an animal swallowed a piece of nevela or what have you, that it's not metamel. Which, by the way, is the case.
They don't become tummy, then.
Well, not, the point is not that the animal itself won't become tummy, but how do we know? For example, you can have an example, and you have examples like this in the Mishnayos and the Sefer Olos. For example, you have a dog swallowed a piece of a human corpse and then walked into an oil. As long as the dog is alive, nothing happens. Nothing in the oil becomes tummy. The dog's body prevents the tumor from going out. Once the dog is dead, that's different. So how do we know that's the case? So again, kavachomer. We're going to use another kavachomer for that purpose. Uma adam shemetame mechayim, madach, a person who's able to become tamei while they're alive, because you can have many, many cases where a person becomes tamei while they're alive, if they touch a dead body, if they touch a sheretz, etc. Matzil, and yet we're saying their body has the power to save the tumor inside them from spreading outward. But it saves the tumor from spreading outward if he swallowed it. Behema she'ena matamim achayim. So then a behema, which cannot become tummy while it's alive, ain't a dincha tatsal babalua. How much more so that should save whatever it swallowed from spreading outward?
Like if a human does it, it's okay. Then
it will come right in. The problem with that, mala adam shekin tzarech shehiyah b'bayis hamanuga. On the other hand, I can tell you, I can find a kula when it comes to a person within a bayis hamanuga, within a house that has tzaraas, where they need to be in. Now, the din is like this. If a person walks into a house that has tzaraas, they become tamei right away. Now, an animal would go in there, it wouldn't, because, again, live animals can't become tummy. But on the other hand, consider what happens if the person versus the animal is wearing clothing. The din is, clothing that a person wears does not become tummy right away as soon as they come into this house, et cetera. They need to be, it's exeris hakasid. They have to be in there a certain amount of time, which we're going to talk about in a minute. So we're going to quote a Mishnah from the Sefer Negoyim that tells us how long. So the person becomes tummy right away, but in order for the clothes that they're wearing to become tummy, they have to be in there for a certain amount of time. We'll see, you know, we'll talk about it in a minute. Whereas if an animal were to go in there, if let's say a dog wearing a sweater were to go in there, then both the dog wouldn't become tummy. Fine, but the sweater becomes tummy right away. So therefore, come on. Okay.
Can eat it?
Okay.
Okay.
Calm down, please. Okay. So, mala adam shekein tzarech shehiya b'bayis hamanuga. What do you mean? A person has a certain kula, namely they have to be in a house of taras for a certain amount of time for their clothing to become tummy. How can you compare? An animal does not need any amount of time. As soon as it walks in there wearing something, that thing will immediately become tummy. So therefore you see there's a kula in a person over a behemoth. Maybe therefore you should say, yeah, a person is able to, therefore we see there. So there's a chumrah in an animal over a person. Maybe therefore we should say a person is able to save something that's balua from being a tamei, an animal is not. Okay, the Gemara answers like this. Behemesh de'enet tzricha shehir b'baisam nugalamai hilsa. It's like this. This that you're saying that an animal does not need to spend any amount of time in a bayis hamanuga for tumah to take place, lamai hilchta, after all, what's the bayis hamanuga? The house of Sarah.
A house of Sarah.
Lamai hilchta, after all, regarding what halacha is it relevant that as soon as the animal comes in there, the tumah? It's not relevant, again, as far as the animal itself, because a live animal is not makabel tumah. It has to be l'kelim shal gaba. It has to be regarding the clothing that it's wearing. Well, animals don't essentially wear clothing. The fact that this particular animal is wearing clothing, don't consider it that it's wearing clothing as in other words, therefore it should have a din different, that you should consider it as if it's carrying the clothing. And in that case...
Does it matter if most animals wear clothing?
No, it doesn't. The pashtus, we would assume that most animals don't. But, yeah. So the point is like this. Within a person also, you have a distinction between clothes that the person is carrying versus clothing the person is wearing. Clothing that a person is carrying becomes tamei as soon as he walks into the house. Clothing that he's wearing, there's a kosher that only after a few minutes do they become tamei. Well, when an animal has, like when a dog has a sweater on it, don't consider it that it's wearing clothing because animals fundamentally don't wear clothing. Consider it that it's carrying it. Well, in that case, that's the same as a human being. So there's no chumrah and kula over there. Adam namila. So of course it becomes tummy right away. If a person was carrying clothing and not wearing it, it would also become tummy right away. Adam namila boy. A person doesn't need to be in there for any amount of time for the clothing that he's carrying to become tummy either. What an animal is wearing is not considered wearing. It's considered carrying. Ditznan, as in fact we learn in a Mishnah in the Goyim, hanichnat labayis hamanuga, if somebody walks into a house with taras, the kalev oksefa, if he has, let's say, his clothing draped over his shoulder, the sandal of a tabois, Caleb means his clothing. Caleb literally means his kalim, but often in shas, Caleb means kalim means clothing. The sandal of a tabois of the yadav, he has his sandals or his rings held in his hands, who hangs me in the yad. Then both he and those things that he's holding will become tummy right away. Tell your lovish Caleb, on the other hand, if he's wearing his clothing in the normal way, the sandal of Baraglam and his sandals are on his feet, also in the normal way, the tabois of the esboi and his rings are on his fingers in his normal way, then who tummy miyad? He will become tummy as soon as he walks in there. The hein tahorin, but those things, the clothing or the shoes or whatever, will remain tahor ad she yishavach de'achilas pras, unless he is in there for the amount of time that it takes to eat a pras. A pras is a half. A pras literally means a half. So it means a half of the size of loaf that you would need for an eruv chatzeis. For an Erev Chatzeres, you need modern shtei sodas. You need the amount of food that you could that you would be able to eat two meals out of. So Rashi over here says it's eight kebeka. You actually have a machloikus in the Gemara over there in Erevin, whether it's six or eight, and you have a machloikus among the poskim what that comes out to halacha, which is negeya, whenever we talk of six or eight.
No, but what's the halacha?
The halacha is either 6 or 8. It's not. We're not sure. Translating it in terms of time, also, you have many different opinions among the poskim, anywhere from 2 to 11 minutes. How long the Kseyachalas crap is, that's relevant as far as eating master, right. But anyway, the point is, therefore, that, so he only becomes top, the clothes only become tummy if he's in there, the Kseyachalas crap. The amount of time that it would take to eat 3 or 4 eggs size of bread, and specifically in that, paschitim v'lo pasorim, we mean by that wheat bread, not barley bread, because wheat bread you can eat faster, because it's more easily chewable and digestible. Mesev, it would have to be the way that a person eats it when he's reclining, where then he eats faster because he's more comfortable. But oichabel lifton, and when he's eating it with some kind of side dish, when also therefore he eats it faster, because just eating plain bread by itself isn't very appetizing. The point is, we're making it the least amount of time in which case a person would eat
the
fast.
1 second, for the Muslim faith, we get extra time.
No, that's the point. In other words, what we're saying is, how do we define b'chdeachelis pras, the definition of b'chdeachelis pras? It's missing again, not only as far as Pesach, it's again as far as various other genium also. Of course, danger if a sick person has to eat onion kipper, for example. Anyway, we define the chdeachelis pras the way this Mishnah is defining it. You figure out how long does it take a person to eat this pras, 3 or 4 eggs, when he's eating it, reclining and eating with some kind of condiment, not really some other food. Lifton is more like a condiment.
Dressing
or something, whatever. That amount of time in which a person would eat that is the definition of chdeachelis pras.
So could it be slow without dressings or condiments?
That's the point. In other words, it would be slower because just eating bread by itself is not very accurate. We do, that's the point. Once we define the diaphilus trash like this over here, as far as this dinner, by some nuga, then it applies across the board for all other places in halakha where we need to know how much is the diaphilus trash.
No, I understand that, but I'm saying, why would you use the same amount of time with condiments, which is faster than without condiment, which is slow.
Without condiment, it would take you longer because it's not as appetizing to eat bread without condiment.
Exactly.
That's the point. The point is we want to have the fastest possible way in which a person will eat this pras. Part of making it faster will be to have it with some kind of condiment, where therefore he will eat it faster. That's the point.
Okay, yeah. He'll eat it faster. But how can we apply this on Pesach when we don't eat with?
Doesn't matter. Once we have a concept called b'chdeachelis pras, that within that time is considered a time to eat, and beyond that is already a separate thing, it's considered a hefsek, then it applies to Pesach and it applies across the
board. So if it took 40% less time with condiment than without, you would still apply that to?
You would still apply that to Pesach. And by the way, it's not as though you can't eat the matzah with condiments. We have our minhag, we don't eat the brach. But in principle, you could spread almost anything you want on the matzah and eat it, right?
Not for the first matzah.
Well, I don't know about that necessarily, but anyway, maybe not. But whatever. The point, you can't knead it. You can't knead it with juice because every matzah shira, but to dip it in juice.
With anything else, so the first matzah.
Really, to dip it in juice or something? Who says not? Okay, anyway, that's not the point. The point still remains that is the definition of Kseyachalas Pras. So therefore, again, if we define, let's say, for example, some ascetic rites, as far as Hilchos Pesach, that a Kseyachalas Pras 6 or 7 minutes, so it means this person walks into this Bayis HaMenuga, anything he's carrying becomes Tomei right away, his clothes that he's wearing, etc., only become Tomei after 6 or 7 minutes. So therefore, returning to the case of an animal...
If he eats his matzons, not the Pesach, 8 minutes, he's not here today.
So therefore, you have to eat your kezias b'chdeachelis pras. How big is a kezias is a whole other question. So therefore,
let's say we know exactly.
If we know how much a kezias is,
and
then yes.
We go 1 minute beyond the amount.
Then you haven't been yotzei because you haven't eaten.
You have not been yotzei.
No, because the eating involves eating a kezias b'chdeachelis pras. That's why it's important. Anyway, so the point is, therefore, so returning to our point, so you have, again, an animal that's wearing a piece of clothing or something and walks into a Bayis HaMenuga is basically the same thing as a person carrying a piece of clothing. So it's not really a chumrah because animals basically don't wear clothes. So therefore, it's not really a chumrah in an animal and a kula in a person. It's just it's a different thing.
Even if it's
a person's pet dog and you put a sweater on, it doesn't matter. Animals are not the kind of creatures that are meant to wear clothes. Okay. First, this actually points out, now you do actually have, sometimes you do have, for example, as far as Hilchos Shabbos, you have certain things that you can have an animal go out and Rosh Hashanah on Shabbos because they're considered clothing or adornments or whatever for it, so wouldn't it be the same kind of thing? The first explains a little bit differently. What it means is like this. An animal does not become tummy. B'chlal, no matter how long it spends in the Bayis HaMenuga, it's not becoming tummy. So what is it that is making the clothes that are on it, even if you consider that it is wearing clothing, what makes them tummy? it's not because it itself becomes tame, therefore it goes to them, because the animal itself never became tame, so therefore we have to say that it's considered, so it's a separate thing. That's the thing. As soon as it walked in, those clothing become tame, unlike clothing that's being worn by a person, where the person himself becomes tame right away, and then, so to speak, after a few minutes, that tuma is transmitted from the person to the clothes. With an animal, you don't have that whole process, because the animal never becomes tame. So therefore, that's the difference. But again, the point of a house with tzaras. Yeah. So therefore, so that's the point. In other words, that. So how is it that the person's clothes become tame? There's a cost of that it takes a few minutes. Whereas with an animal, if you were to go by logic, you would say the clothes of the animal would never become tame, because after all, the animal itself is never becoming tame. Yet we see that they do. So therefore, we see it's not a matter of chomer or kola. It's just the difference between carrying them versus wearing them. Okay. So we're left with, we still have a valid kal v'chomer, that if a person swallows something and a person is able to become tame while they're alive, yet the person's body prevents the tumor from spreading outward and being metame other things in the same room, how much more so if it's swallowed by an animal? We haven't gotten to the ring. Well, we've been talking about two things. We've been talking about Rabba's original statement, right, that just like tumor blua is not metame, so tara blua does not become tame. That's what we were discussing, all that. Okay, so now, Omar Rava. So Rava says, why did Rava have to tell us those two statements? Tavaihu Tanani. Both of those statements, that Tuma Blua is not the Tame, and that Tara Blua, that something like a ring that a person swallowed will not become Tame when he walks into an Oil Ames, even though he himself becomes Tame, both of those, Tavaihu Tanani, both of those we find the Shnayas that tell us the exact same thing. So what's Rava's Kiddush? Tuma blua tanena. We learn about the concept of tuma blua not being metame. Tara blua tanena, and we learn that tara blua, that if a person swallowed something tar, that it won't become tame when he becomes tame. So what's Rabbi's chiddush? Tuma blua is like this. It's nine. And we learn in a Mishnah in Mikvaros, bola tabas tmeya. If a person swallowed a ring that was tame. And now how did it become tame over here? Tosfos points out it can't be that it became tame by a sheretz. Because if it became tame by touching a sheretz, the sheretz is an ava tuma. The ring is only a rishon l'tuma. A rishon l'tuma can't be metame a person. By definition, a rishon and lower can only be metame food and drinks. So if we're talking about whether it's metame the person or not, we can't be talking about it became tame by a sheretz. So it must be that it became tame mess. And therefore, now you have a concept. You have a concept in halacha called cherev harehu kacholo.
Tumas sheretz never metame.
No, tumas sheretz.
No, I mean,
a sheretz would be metame the first thing that it touches, right, whatever it is. But that thing cannot be metame a person. Right.
Secondary.
Right. The only thing where you have a secondary thing that can be metame a person is tumas mess, because the mess itself is an aviyavo is a tumas. Yes. So you actually have a concept called cherev harehu kacholo. That we learn from a pasuk in Parashas Chukas in the section about Parah Adumah over there, that a sword or any other keli that touches a mess or that comes in contact with a mess has the same din as the mess itself as far as that's able to be metame a person. So therefore, this ring over here we're talking about, it became tame mess, and therefore when the person swallows it, then we can talk about whether he's tame or not. So Tosfos learns actually that what it would mean over here is, because this ring was, yeah, by the way, I should mention, you have a machlokas, because we're showing him whether it only applies to metal kalim, or whether it applies to kalim made out of other materials as well, but anyway, let's not get into that. A ring is made out of metal, so either way, it would be cherev harehu kacholo. So, it's metame the person, and Tosfos learns, actually, what it means is, the person will become tame mess. They will have to be sprinkled with parah adumah water, they will be tame for 7 days, etc., but we're talking about what happens at the end of that whole process. The Baal Amar learns differently. He says cherev harehu kacholo doesn't make it so far. It doesn't go so far as to say that he should need parah adumah water. Just means that he's tame for 7 days, and eventually he needs to go to the mikveh. Anyway, so bola tabas tmeya. So if a person swallowed a ring that was tame mess again. So then eventually, once he's done with his 7 days, he can tovel, and then he's able to eat truma, even though the ring is still inside his stomach,
yeah,
because it's truma blua.
I'm not sure if it's still
inside. It hasn't come out yet. If it came out, he would know about it. And the pashas is still inside, and it's a ring. It's not getting digested in there. So it's either still in there, or eventually it came out. But if it's still in there, then, yeah. So he can tovel, and he can eat truma. He doesn't have to worry about the fact that there's something tame inside his stomach, because, one, again, truma blua. Hekia. Then if he throws it up, It didn't become Tahor when he totaled because it was inside his body. Therefore, Tmeya, it's still Tomei, the Timato, and it makes him Tomei because when he throws it up, it touches him on the outside. I guess we have to assume that it touches like his lips or whatever, some other exposed part. The lips, parts of the lips are, right?
The inside of the lips, yeah.
He touched the lips again?
Maybe according to Tosis, maybe he would have to throw it the 7 days again. Yeah, very possible. Anyway, we see from that Tuma Blua is not Matame, because as long as it's inside his body, it's not Matame him. So why did Rabbah have to tell us that? And Tahara Blua Tanena, and the case of Tahara Blua, where you swallowed something Tahara, that it doesn't become Tomei when you become Tomei, also Tanena, it also says in the same Mishnah. That's not, because that Mishnah continues. Bola Tabas Tahara, if a person swallowed a ring that was Tahara, the Nichnas La Oil Mess, then he went into an Oil Mess, and now he's Tomei. The Hiza Vashana, he had the first sprinkling of Parah Adroma on the third day, the second one on the seventh day, the Tovol, then he Tovold, so everything should be good, but then the Hekia, then he threw it up, that ring, Harehi Kimasha Hoysa. That ring still has the same status as before. It did not become Tomei when it was inside his body, because it's Parah Blua. And therefore, nothing happens when he throws it up. So we see from that the Tara Blua remains Tahar. So both of those things we have in that Mishnah and Makloris. What is Rabbah telling us? What's he adding? The answer is Kika Omer Rabbah Kugan Shabala Shtei Tabois. You're right, but if we only had that Mishnah, so Rashi learns like this. There's Rashi versus Tosfos. Here, let's talk first about what Rashi says. If we didn't have Rabbah's statement, we would think like this. That Mishnah is not, the issues in that Mishnah, the Tahara and the Tumah over there, are not because of the issue of Tumah Blua or Tahara Blua. It's rather because of the other concept, Maga Beis Astorim. Touching something with a concealed part of your body is not considered touching. So therefore, you could argue, in other words, that's why he's not Tomei from the Tomei ring inside him, not because Tuma Blua, because Maga Beis Astorim, because touching it with the inside of his stomach. And as far as the Tabas Tahora also, is again that the person cannot be Matame. It's same thing, Maga Beis Astorim, and touching him on the inside of his stomach. So he becomes Tomei, but that's not reason enough to make the ring Tomei. That wouldn't necessarily prove the concept of Tahara Blua and Tuma Blua.
Two rings?
No, so far we haven't gotten the two rings. So far we're talking about one ring. Yeah. However, again, because not necessarily is it proving anything about Tuma Blua. It proves that the person is not able to be matam with the ring, or the ring is not able to be matam with the person by contact.
By internal contact.
But that doesn't necessarily show that that ring maybe can't be matame other things around it, that maybe it's not matame him by contact, but maybe that it's matame other things in the room. We wouldn't know that from that Mishnah. And not only other things in the room, but also other things inside his stomach as well, which is what we're going to say now. Ki ka'omer Rabbah kugan shabala shtei tabois. What is Rabbah talking about? He's talking about a case where a person swallowed two rings. Achas tmeya v'achas tahora. And the chiddush is the matame yola v'tmeya l'tahora. That the chiddush is that the Tomei one is not Metame, the Tahor one. Now there, it's not a matter of Beis HaStorim, because relative to the rings themselves, there's no Beis HaStorim over there. The one surface of it is touching, the surface of one is touching the surface of the other. So you can't say it shouldn't become, you can't say that Maga Beis HaStorim is enough to prevent it from becoming Tomei. What would make it not become Tomei? Tumah Blua. There you go. So you see that Tumah Blua is not Matame, something else that's next to it. And you see that Tahara Blua is not becoming Tomei from something else.
Tumah Blua is between the inside to the body.
Tumah Blua means the person swallowed, for example, a Tomei ring.
Right.
But here we're saying
he won't be Tomei.
So he won't be Tomei. But now we're saying not only he won't be Tomei from swallowing that from that Tomei ring, but also when he swallowed it again, if it touched him on the outside, he'll become Tomei Kuchedot Harei Kuchol. We're talking about after that whole thing, after Paradrum and water and all that. Fine. So now that he toveled and did everything and he still has the ring inside him, if now he swallowed, or if at some point during that period he swallowed the Tahor ring, that Tahor ring will not become Tomei inside him. Because of Tumah Blua and because of Tahara Blua. That's the point. Because it works two ways. The Tumah Blua is not able to be Matame something else, namely the other ring. Tahara Blua, something that is Tahar when he swallowed it, namely the original ring, is not able to become Tahar, is not able to become Tomei. from touching, from being in contact with something else, a trauma.
Yeah, but that's to the body. We never said between two rings.
Now, that's the point. That's what Rabbi is informing
that's
us. That trauma, that's the chiddush of Rabbi. Because that's what Rabbi is telling us. That charam blua and trauma blua do not only relate to the person himself or to other things in the womb or whatever. They also relate to other things within the same body.
If we know that both rings touch, the x-ray, they're both touching one another.
Doesn't matter. The one that was tummy is still tummy. The one that's tahar is still tahar. Because it's trauma blua.
But that's adding something.
No, else. No. But that is Rabba's point. That Tumah Blua and Tara Blua work that way as well. Yeah. Okay. I mean, that's
it's the ring that's Tame that does not.
The ring that does not Matame the other ring. Exactly.
Why does it have to be with the ring is Matame? What has to do with
the ring is not Matame because it's Blua. Why is it not Matame the other ring that it's touching because it's Blua? It's not Matame the person because Maga Besa started, you could argue, but that's not Matame. The other ring has to be because of Truma Blua. So that is Rabba's point. Tosfos actually asks where Rabba would get that from, and Tosfos answers because he learns it also from Ha'orichalos Nivlasa, where we have like this. Again, we talk about a case where a person might eat a piece of Nivela, and become Tomei in the course of eating it, because he touched it, goes to the mikveh, has head of Shemesh. After that, he's able to eat Truma. Again, even though when he eats Truma, the Truma is going to touch the Nivela that's still inside his stomach, and we see that that's not a problem. Therefore, we see that the Truma Blua is not a...
The truma will not become tame.
We know because the pasuk is telling us that if he ate nevela, all he needs is truma and head of shemesh, and doesn't distinguish between whether he ate the nevela long enough before shkia to have been digested.
So what do we need to see?
That's the point. Rabbi. Therefore, Rabbi is spelling that out for us. That from that we learn this whole concept of truma blua. That truma blua is not matame, and that is not matame. Something else that's next.
So what we're saying is truma blua has not only an effect on the outside body, but it has an effect on the inside.
That's the point. That's what we're saying. Because it's inside, it's as if it's not tame for this purpose, right? Once it comes out again, then it can resume its original truma or its original tamara.
One second. What about if you had two rings that were tame and one that was tara?
What about it? Doesn't matter.
It wouldn't matter.
Why would it matter?
One.
Yeah, we're not talking about a matter of bitzel over here. We're talking about is it truma blua or not. All of them are truma blua. Okay, I mean, Tosfos has some problems with Rashi's explanation and explains a bit differently the same way as truma blua is not matame the person who swallowed it, the same way it's not matame the tahor thing that's next to it.
Yeah.
A little bit of a different kvetch than Rashi had. In other words, Tosfos says it's not really. Don't bring in here the whole matter of Maga Beis Hastorim. We could say that the Mishnah is also telling us because of Truma Blua, but the Mishnah we would only know the ring is not Matame him. We wouldn't know that's not Matame something else next to it. And Rabbi informed us that's not Matame something else next to it either. Fine. So the question is, now let's relate all this back to our Mishnah. What about the case in our Mishnah where the midwife touched the dead baby that's inside the womb? We said that the midwife is tamei from touching the baby, and the mother remains tahor until the baby is actually born. Now, the unborn baby and the midwife are like shtei taboris, because they're two different entities over here. And the baby is a truma blua, become a tama la uber l'chaya. And yet you see that when the midwife touches the uber, she becomes tame. So again, Rashi explains that therefore that
it's
should
inside the body.
It's still inside the womb.
The baby is still inside the womb.
That's fine. The point still remains. It's truma blua. So Rashi learns according to his shitta over here that. Therefore, the point is, we should argue that the only reason that the woman is not Tomei is that the mother is not Tomei is because of Maga Beis Hastorim. So in other words, we should argue Truma Blua is Matame, but only the mother is only Tahor because at this point it's Maga Beis Hastorim because she's touching it with the inside of her womb. And again, according to Tosfos, we're saying that you should argue that the woman, fine, is Tomei because of Truma Blua, but If the midwife is like a second ring, then why is she becoming Tomei from it either? We just said that Truma Blua doesn't have the ability to be Tomei something else.
Yeah, but the second ring was inside the body.
That doesn't really matter. The point is that the Truma Blua is not able to be Tomei something else. In that particular case, the second ring is inside also. But in this particular case, the Chaya is outside, but it doesn't matter. Either way, it's Truma Blua. So why is it Tomei?
So
Well, the Rambam shiny uber hoyo v'solcha losses. The Rambam says the difference is that a baby is eventually going to come out. So therefore, that's the question. Alma Rabba Uber Social Lotus Tabasing. Social Lotus. And what the ring is not going to end up coming out. Eventually he's gonna defecate it out. Yeah. Ella Alma Rabba Sandra says, never mind that. We can't explain the Dinin on Mishnah on the basis of the concept of Tumah Blua, because then you're left with the question, why is the midwife Tomei and the mother not? Ella Alma Rabba.
So what do we conclude then?
So we haven't concluded yet. We conclude that we can't necessarily say that our Mishnah, that the reason for the Tumah in our Mishnah, for the Tumah and the Tara in our Mishnah, is based on the concept of Tumah Blua. Ella Omar Rabba.
We still accept
that. We can still accept the basic concept, fine, but that's not the reason why the midwife is Tomei and the mother is not.
You can't look from Sukkot where it says clearly that a dead animal is in the baby. You can't.
Well, he was talking about a dead human baby. He was talking about a dead human baby, but yeah. No, that a dead human baby is matame, that's for sure, of course. He was talking about a human. But no, that's matame, of course. It's a dead body of a person. The question is it matame when it's Tumah Blua?
When it's inside.
Yeah, when it's inside. Mind you, I mean, you have a portion to talk about the question before we were explaining how we know that Tumah Blua is not matame. We were mentioning about the whole concept that it's digested in the lower half of the body or whatever. Here we're talking about it's in the womb. It's not the place where it's digested anyway. So what's the so how taka do we know it's not Tumah Blua?
So inside.
No, but nevertheless, though, if we said we only learned the concept, if we only learned the concept on the basis of the ha'oichel minivlosa plus a couple of kavah chomers, then how does that necessarily apply to when it's in the womb?
The womb is not a place where it just
and one answer that's given is the difference is that at least in the cases before that we were talking about as far as nevela and rings and whatever, those started out outside the body. So they're like, they have a status of their own. Here the baby grows inside the womb. So therefore, there's reason also to consider it Tumah Blua. Fine, it doesn't get digested over there, obviously, but on the other hand, it did grow there to begin with. Right, but on the other hand, it did grow there to begin with. Okay, anyway.
And the koyak, everything that helps it grow comes from...
Well, yeah, that's also correct. Okay, Ella Omar Rava. So Rava says, no, to explain on Mishnah, we need a different reason. The Chachamim of Pumpadisa know the real reason behind our Mishnah, and the Gemara interjects to Manu, who is the Pumpadisoi that Rava is talking about? Rav Yosef, namely Rav Yosef, which I'm not sure why Rav Yosef particularly is. I mean, he was the Rosh Hashiva of Pumpadisa, but Rava was also, so I'm not real sure why Rav Yosef particularly is called Pumpadisoi, but anyway. The Omer of Yosef, Omer of Yehuda, Omer Shmuel, maybe that's it, because Rabbi Yosef is quoting in the name of Rabbi Yehuda, who was also the Rosh Hashiva of Pumbedisa, who quoted in the name of Shmuel, who was the Rosh Hashiva of Nahada, which the Yeshiva of Pumbedisa took over from Nahada. Whatever, anyway, so maybe what Rava is saying is like it's a chain of tradition that's known among the Chachamim from that particular Beit Medrash. Anyway. Tumazu, Einim, Divrei Torah, Elam, Divrei Sofim. The Tumah that we're talking about in our Mishnah, the Tumah of the midwife. Why is the midwife Tumah when she touches the baby, when on the face of it she ought not to be, because it's Tumah Blua, that Tumah is not Minat Torah, it's only Midivrei Sofim. It's only Midrabbanan, for reasons that we're going to explain. So Midaraisa, she wouldn't be Tumah, only Midrabbanan is she Tumah.
She would not because of Tumah Blua.
Right. So the question,
the midwife.
So the question is, my Eina Medivrei Torah Ela Medivrei Sofim, why does he have to say both? Once you say, all you have to say is it's Medivrei Sofim, automatically that means it's not Daraisa. Why the long expression is not Medivrei Torah, but rather Medivrei Sofim? What it means is, Deloitte, Ma'alibah de Rabbi Akiva. You shouldn't think that maybe you have to say that our Mishnah is specifically according to Rabbi Akiva, the Amar Uber B'mei Ishatame, where Rabbi Akiva holds that a baby in the mother's womb is Tame. He doesn't hold of this concept of Tumah Blua, or at least he doesn't hold that it applies over here, as we're going to see in a minute.
Because it's not in the
Tumah. No, we're going to see in a minute. He learns from a pasuk. We're going to see why. So according to Rabbi Akiva, if you were to explain our Mishnah like Rabbi Akiva, then yes, the Tumah of the midwife would be Daraisa. And for that matter, the only reason to say that the mother herself wouldn't be Tumah is because Maga Beis Astorim, because she's not touching it with an exposed area of her body.
Not because
of Tumah Blua. But don't think, says Rabbi Yosef, that our Mishnah has to be like Rabbi Akiva, Da'ama Uber B'me'e Ishatame, who says that the baby in the mother's womb is already able to be Matame Be'er. Ela afila the Rabbi Shmuel. No, our Mishnah can even work according to Rabbi Shmuel. Dama Ubavim, Ishatahu, who he says that the Midaraisa, the baby inside the mother's womb, the dead baby in the mother's womb, is not Matame. However, even he could agree, Gazru Batuma Midrabana. Not the Chachamim made Xera that the midwife will become Tame by touching. Yeah. My timer. Now, what would be the reason? Why would they make such a Xera? Amar Aposhia, Xera Shemi Yotzi Vlad Roshe Chutz L'Kroizer. Because we make a gzera, because what might happen, like this, you're talking about that the midwife sticks her hands in and touches the baby, try and pull it out or whatever. What happens if the baby had already stuck out its head outside of the proizder? The proizder is the birth canal. So if the baby had actually stuck out its head, then it's already considered born, malacha. So then it's definitely matame.
Face, we said, not
its head. We meant, in other words, the majority. In other words, enough of its head for its face to be visible. Yeah. So it means enough of it. That's what we mean. Right. The forehead, the nose, whatever, yeah. So therefore, then it would be considered born already. Then it would definitely be matame. Now, the midwife might mistakenly think it's still inside the womb. So then she's not going to realize that she became tame.
She's supposed to make a delivery. She doesn't put her hand.
So fine, she'll have to make the delivery and she'll have to become tame. Yeah. Can't be helped. She'll have to take it on herself to become tame. Fine.
So why do we have that theory then?
The point is, we don't want that she became tame and she thinks she didn't become tame. Then what's going to happen is that a few days later she's going to go into the Beth Mikdash or something or touch Kodshim or whatever.
She thinks she did not become tummy after delivering a baby.
Okay, 1 second. She reached in while the baby was in the womb and started handling it.
So
it would be Tumah Blua. She shouldn't become tummy from that. But Midrabanan, we're concerned, what if the baby actually stuck out its head and she may not have realized the difference between the baby actually being a little bit out?
She would be
Tumah D'Oraisa, right. So when it comes to the previous case, two Mishnayos ago about the dead animal baby that the shepherd pulled out of there, that's different. There's no proizer. We said over there that animals don't have a proizer. They don't have buttocks that cover the birth canal. So as soon as the baby's head comes out, it's immediately obvious. With a woman where you have her thighs and her buttocks or whatever, it may not necessarily be that obvious. So therefore, we have to make that in Zeta. Okay. So the question is
very obvious in a woman.
It's not so obvious though, because again, it's more covered up. Okay. It may also depend what position she's in during the delivery. Anyway,
she's always in the same position.
No, she's not necessarily. No, they were different positions. They didn't have hospitals. That's true, but also
Did you ever see a woman not delivering?
I have never seen a woman delivering. Period. But fine. But but nowadays, for example, I think they usually have them like spread eagled. But whereas in olden times, like you have, for example, you have like a stone that they would sit on with a hole in the middle of it for the baby to fall through. So yeah, it was a different position.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, that's what we're Isam Allah of Noyim.
I've never been a gynecologist, but in modern days, at least like put a sheet between the doctor and the woman, so I don't.
I have no idea. I don't think so. No, the doctor has to be able to see what they're doing. So therefore, so the question is, Yehochi Ishanami, then in that case, why are you telling me the woman herself is not Tomei until the baby actually comes out? You should say the mother herself should be Tomei for the same reason, because the baby might have come out and she doesn't realize. Yes, so because enough of the baby might have come out that she doesn't realize. Once enough of it comes out, then it's not Magabe Sastonim anymore. Then she's touching it with outside areas of her body. The answer is Ishimageshis Ba'atma. The answer is the mother herself will feel when the baby is out enough that she becomes Tommy. So therefore she'll know at what point she becomes Tommy. So the question is, Vatema Lolachaya. Fine, as soon as that happens, she should be able to tell the midwife. So why are we making a zera on the midwife, not on the mother? The answer is Trida. Okay, the mother is a little bit busy over here. She's having birth pangs and then she's distracted or whatever. She'll have enough presence of mind maybe to know herself, to feel for herself when it comes out. And therefore to know at what point she becomes Tomei, but not necessarily enough to be able to tell the midwife right then and there. So therefore we have to make Xera.
We make the Xera for...
That's why, because the baby may have come out enough that it's considered born, and the midwife touched it without realizing it. So therefore the midwife is going to be Tomei for 7 days, like any person who touches a dead person, and then
this would all be similar to animal as well.
No, so an animal. Well, so not really. I mean, so we said that with an animal, we said that if the shepherd touches the baby while it's in the womb over there, then he's not. According to the Tanakami, he didn't become Tomei at all, and according to Rabbi Yitzchak, really, he becomes Tomei only if it's a non-kosher species. Yeah.
So why should it be coming after 7 days?
Because you touched a dead body. The baby is dead. If the baby was alive, we're not talking about. We're talking about where the baby died in the womb. Yeah, we're talking about this as a stillbirth. The baby died in the womb. Yeah.
Okay.
So the mother herself will also become Tomei as soon as the baby is actually born, as soon as enough of it is born that it actually touches the outside of her body.
Right.
Then she'll become Tomei for the same reason. She'll also be Tomei Tomas Shiva. But we're talking about the midwife if the baby's alive, we're not talking about nobody. The mother is Tomei later. The mother has the trauma of birth. The midwife has no trauma at all.
Right.
What's being the time of the midwife then? Tosfos discusses over here that actually it doesn't even mean necessarily, let's say, so here we've been talking about if the head came out, what happens, for example, if, let's say, an arm comes, let's say, for example, if an arm or something comes out first. So therefore, actually what it is, that's the point. Tosfos says that the baby is not considered born yet, but on the other hand, the fact is it's not tumah blua. But until the baby is born, Rabbi Shmuel is going to say, as he says in a second, until the baby is considered born, malacha, then it's not matame. So it's not just a matter of tuma blua, in other words, it's a matter of, as long as the baby is not considered born, Rabbi Shmuel holds there the cause of
the
matame.
No,
but once you have roiv, then it's also. Once roiv comes out, it's also.
Just before roiv,
then it wouldn't be tame. So my Rabbi Shmuel and my Rabbi Akiva, what do we have? Where do we see Rabbi Shmuel's and Rabbi Akiva's opinions on this subject? So like this, Titania, we learn in a braisa. You have a pasuk that says in the parasha of Paradroma, "V'chol asher yiga al pnei hasadeh," anything that touches on the surface of the field, implying that it's something out in the open. So what does that mean? Lahotzi ubur v'me'isha divrei Rabbi Shmuel. So Rabbi Shmuel says that pasuk implies that a baby in the mother's womb is not matamei. That a dead baby in the mother's womb is not matamei. And again, like Tosfos says, even if one or more limbs of it are already sticking out, but the fact that it's not considered born yet lahalacha, it's not al pnei hasadeh, therefore it's not matamei. Rabbi Akiva Omer, L'rabos Golo Medosis. Rabbi Akiva says, on the contrary, those words al pnei hasadeh are not a mute to exclude something that is hidden and is not al pnei hasadeh. On the contrary, it's coming to include something which you would usually find al pnei hasadeh, namely the Golol and Dofik. The Golol and Dofik are Rashi explains over here in a number of places in Shas, that the Golol is the lid of an Aron and the Dofik are the side pieces of it.
The lid of a coffin,
of a mess. And so Rashi explains, it's called the Golo, and then you have the side pieces that hold up the lid are called the Dofa. Each one is called a Dofa.
One time.
So that's usually up now. So now Tosfos in a number of places in Shas has a problem with that, among others, because those aren't usually up now. They're buried underground in the cave. So therefore, Tosfos explains rather than... So Rashi might explain it that way. Anyway, Tosfos explains somewhat differently that the Golo is the Matseva, the monument over the caver, and the Dofik are the side pieces that hold that up. Anyway, whatever it is, so Rabbi Akiva says, we learn from this pasuk that those are Matame a person as well, if he touches them. So according to Tosfos, it would mean that the Matseva itself is Matame. I'm not sure what the halacha is. I mean, we're all Tomei mess nowadays anyway. It's not really as relevant.
No,
well, there we have the whole question about kibbutz tzaddik and the tamim. But whatever. Again, for Yisraelim, we're all Tomei mess anyway. For kohenim, they anyway have to stay away from the kever anyway. So. Yeah, well, they're also Tomei mess, but nevertheless, even when a kohen is Tomei, he has a mitzvah not to become Tomei anymore. So therefore, yeah, he'd still have to stay as far away.
The tamim you get a stone carries the Torah.
Yeah, stone can still, yeah, Goyle and Dofik. Actually, Goyle and Dofik are actually almost the only example where I was saying before that a live animal can't become Tomei. But actually, the Gemara mentions elsewhere that if a live animal is used as a Goyle, then it will become Tomei. At least as long as it's serving as a Goyle.
What's
a Goyle? A Goyle, again, according to Rashi, means the top, means the lid of a coffin, and according to Tosfos, it means the monument, the Maseva or whatever, over the grave.
How can it be used as a Goyle?
Let's say you took an animal and put it over there temporarily to serve as a golol on top of the cake, serve a marker over the caper, let's say. So yeah. Anyway, the point is that sort of Akiva holds such things on a time a person when he touches it. Actually, by the way, I don't remember what the halacha is as far as the definition of golol and dofik, but this reminds me actually, since we're talking about tumas kohen, I meant to mention this, that we're talking about tuma blua over here, and we're saying the baby is blua inside the mother. What about then the other way around? We said tara blua does not become tomei, so therefore that should imply that if you have a mother, a wife of a kohen who's pregnant with a baby, even if we, so on the face of it, she should be able to go into a beit hakvaros or a hospital or what have you, because what's the problem? The baby is a tara blua. He shouldn't be able to become tomei. Yet the problem is the Rekeach, one of the Rishonim, says that a pregnant wife of a Kohen should not go into a Beis HaKavodis in case she's carrying a boy. She won't be Matame her husband, but because of the baby. And actually, that the only not that she shouldn't, but the only reason she could be mutter to is because that the only reason she could be mutter to is because of sex paper. First of all, you don't know if she's carrying a boy or a girl. If it's a girl doesn't have a mitzvah not to become Tome anyway. And second of all, even if it's a boy, not necessarily is it going to be a ben kayama. He's not necessarily going to be a healthy, viable baby. So because of that, so the question is, but nevertheless, the question still, a lot of the Achronim ask then, why do we need a spec faker for that? Based on our Gemara over here, it's a power of Lua, what's the problem? And there's a lot of different answers, including maybe that there's a distinction between whether she's about to give birth versus beforehand. Maybe the Radvaz versus the Chassam Sofer, one of them says that maybe the concern is Davka when she's about to give birth, but not before that. The other one says the other way around. You have a couple of different possible answers. But you have that
Din. One thing that happens very often is sometimes the woman is dilated and the baby is almost ready to go out,
mm-hmm.
but I'm not sure if that qualifies as the leader because the face is...
And the face is still inside, so it's not considered born yet.
The face has to be outside.
Maybe at that...
You can see the face.
Yeah, you can see it, but it's still not out yet.
Well, what about this Kohen?
So therefore, so
such a young age, doesn't matter.
Yeah, because we'll have to go to the Malachanim. The Kohen have a responsibility to make sure that even the junior Kohen don't become Tommy.
And how about the mother touching the baby? She's
That's fine. She's not Matame him because a person who themselves is Tommy Ness is not Matame another person with Tumas Ness. They're Matame them with a lesser Tumas, fine, but not Tumas Ness. A Kohen only has a mitzvah not to become Tommy Ness. So he can't be in an oil mess. He can't. Yeah, he himself can't touch a mess, be in an oil or whatever. She would be an av, I think. But he would be a rishon, I think.
She's coming for 40, whatever.
She would be coming. Well, she's tummy later. That's a whole other matter. That has nothing to do. That has nothing. A Kohen is allowed to become tummy with other kinds of tumas. Only tumas mess is not allowed to. Okay.
She's allowed to get
a Kohen is allowed to become Tomei, other Tumas. Sure, a Kohen can become Tomei, Tumas Nevela. A Kohen can become Tomei with Tumas Sheretz or whatever. Yeah, it's only Tumas Nes.
No,
it's black letter halacha. Only Tumas Nes is not allowed to know. Okay, fine. Okay, so anyway, so getting back to the Gemara. So therefore, we see that Rabbi Shmuel holds that you have an actual pasuk. You have the pasuk of Chol Asher Yigal Pnei Asadeh that tells us that an unborn baby is not Metame. So there you go. Therefore, according to Rabbi Shmuel, Medar Raisa, it's not Metame the midwife as long as it's in the womb. And only Midrabbanan is in the time. And Rabbi Akiva has said no, and Rabbi Akiva would say that an Uber is actually in the time because he holds that a Kol Asher Yigal Pnei Asadeh is referring to a girl or a doyfik, that they're Matame as well, and so is a baby in the womb. So, Rabbi Shmuel girl or a doyfik. What would Rabbi Shmuel say? Where does he learn girl or a doyfik? The answer is Hilchta Gnuyla. He would say sure, a girl and a doyfik are Matame, but you don't learn them from a pasuk. Now, lachol moshe misinai. So therefore, we don't have a pasuk for it, and therefore the pasuk tells us about the uber. Where does Rabbi Akiva know that a baby inside the mother's womb is tome and is metame midaraisa? Again, once dead, we're talking about. How does he know that? The fact of the matter is, even if you don't say that al pnei asodah, even if you're going to say you're doushing from al pnei asodah, that means goel and dofik, the fact of the matter is, the pasuk seems to be implying that whatever it is that's matame has to be exposed, and a baby is not exposed because it's in the womb. So Rabbi Akiva would need an actual pasuk to tell us otherwise. Amar of Oshi, Amar Krah, because you have another pasuk in the parasha Paradruma, Hanegeya bimeis bin nefesh, if a person touches in a mess, in a nefesh, so therefore, the benefesh, as we've done a few times in the parak, the beis doesn't mean among or around or whatever. It means within. The same way as we said behema bibehema means one behema inside the other. So the same way, benes binefesh, ezehu mes she binefesh shal adam. Where do you have a case of one mess inside another nefesh adam? Heve omer zeh uber she meisha, an unborn baby. So there you go. He says there you have the pasuk telling you that it's metamet.
And he doesn't hold by the other one.
So therefore, he would say, so like this, he would say, Kol Asher Yigal Pnei Asadeh is telling us about a girl and dofik that they're matam. You still would say that something has to be exposed to be tummy? No, because Anegev Ameis Benefesh tells us that even an unborn baby is matam.
Very clear.
Okay. On the other hand, for Rabbi Shmuel, what would Rabbi Shmuel answer to that? He would say, He would say, I use that pasuk to teach us that a revius of blood that comes from a person, that comes from a dead body, is metame. You have enough.
Oh,
yeah, it's binefesh. It's in the nefesh. Shenema hanegev b'meis b'nefesh adam. And he says like this: Ezehu nefesh shal adam shematame. How do you have a case of nefesh on the face? Nefesh on the face of it means a soul. A soul is not matame. So what does it mean? How is a person becoming tame from a nefesh? Nefesh can mean the life force. Heavy omer zuravias dam. There's a revias dam, which is the essence of the life of a person. Revias alo dam chaya adam tlui. Dama nefesh is called. Now, how does that mean? I mean, in modern terms, you can't have a person can't live with only your revias of blood in their body. You have a couple of explanations, one of them being that we're talking about when a baby first starts forming in the womb, then you have the first point when you can say that there's blood in that unborn baby, there's a revias of it. So therefore, in that sense, the revias is like a fundamental quantity for human life. And another explanation is, I think Rabbeinu Hanano says that the dam solo shabalev is the expression, like the clear blood that's in the heart. That's the expression he uses. It means the pastor is like the essence of the blood. I guess maybe if you were to add up, for example, maybe all the volume of the red blood cells and white blood cells and the blood, maybe conceivably it would add up to around a revius. I don't know. I mean maybe you have the minimum amount of red blood cells that a person would, and white blood cells that a person would need to live could fit inside a revius, maybe, I don't know, whatever it is, the point is that that's how it is. A revius dam is considered the essence of life. So that's what it means. Hanegeya b'meis b'nefesh means that a person touches not only the mess as a whole, but even if he only touches the nefesh, the revius, the blood, from the one person, from the one dead body, then already he's fine. Where's Rabbi Akiva would answer? He goes according to his own Savara. He disagrees with that din. He says, Apravias Dama Bamashnemes in the Tana Boyle. He says it's not just the Ravias of blood from one mess that would be Matame. Even if the Ravias was half from one dead body and half from another, it would where it's not enough to keep either of them alive, it would also be Matame. But oil. It would also be Matame if a person's under the same oil as it. Because the pasuk says al kol nafshes meis lo yavoi. The pasuk says about a kohen gadol that he shouldn't come into any place where there's nafshes meis. Nafshes is the plural. So therefore, it means shtei nafshes v'shir echad. You have two nafshes, two human beings, but you only have one shir. One revius is already enough to be metameh him, and therefore you have to stay out of such a place. Rabbi Shmuel would answer to that. Rabbi Shmuel would say that the word in the pasuk is written nafshos without a vav. Rabbi Shmuel holds of a concept called yesh em l'masoras, which we've talked about before in Shas in a few places, that the primary thing is how the words are written in the Sefer Torah, not how they're pronounced. It's written nun fe shin sof, so therefore we can read it as if it said nafshas, and therefore that means only one nefesh. So the bottom line is, therefore, that So Rabbi Akiva again is saying that a revius from two mason is matam of oil. Rabbi Shmuel disagrees with that. Therefore, he needs the pasuk Hanegeya b'meis b'nefesh to teach us that a revius dam from one person is matam. In turn, Rabbi Akiva, who disagrees with that concept, holds that that pasuk teaches us about an unborn baby. Rabbi Shmuel would say that an unborn baby is not matam. So therefore, our Mishnah, they were saying,
an unborn baby
is matam. Because we learned from Ba'al Kol Nafshe, because he says Hanegeya b'meis b'nefesh. Yeah. Whereas Rabbi Shmuel is using Hanegeya b'meis b'nefesh to teach us about a revius of blood from one man. Yeah. Okay, so the bottom line is, therefore, that's what we meant when we said that even Rabbi Shmuel would agree to the Tumah of our Mishnah, but he would say it's only Dirabalan. Whereas Rabbi Akiva would say it's Dirabalan. Yeah.
At this point, the Balua is coming up.
So it is true that Tumah Blua is not Matame. It is true that Tara Blua is not becoming Tame from other things around it.
Yeah,
however, our Mishnah is not talking about that, because then you wouldn't have a difference between the midwife and the mother. And actually, we would say, we couldn't say either, because Uber Sofer Lossus, because you could say the same thing about a ring, is also Sofer Lossus, and yet we're making a distinction. So therefore,
how would you determine that it's tamanefesh or not tamanefesh?
You wouldn't. Once you have a revius, a revius of blood from the mess is matame. That's what I'm saying. Okay. Because a revius of blood is capable of being tamanefesh, therefore any revius
is.
Balaturim, by the way, on that last pasuk, the Alkol Nafshes Meis points out that pasuk, every two words in that pasuk end with the same letter. The Alkol Nafshes Meis, two stops, Loy Yavoi, two alephs, Aviv or Imoi, two vavs, Loy Yitama, two alephs. So therefore he says that the remez for Rabbi Akiva is saying that a revius that comes from combined two mason is matame. Because that even if the revius is combined from two different mason, like here you have every two words end with the same letter, then
one person.
No, if it's one person for sure it's matame, everybody agrees with that. But the Rabbi Akiva says that even if you have an eighth, of, even if you have a half a revius from one body and a half from another, that's matame, when you have them together, that he learns from this pasuk.
Well, touch.
Yeah, yeah. You put it together in one case, let's say.
Each one is not.
Even though each one is not a revius of blood from one person. Right. Every two words in the pasuk, mace lo yovei lo avi. Okay, let's go on. Mishnah says, getting back to pregnant animals. We digress to talk about pregnant human mother. Now we're getting back to the main subject of our parak, which is animals. Mishnah says, Behema hamakshalelid. So now let's get to the let's talk about. We've been talking about the idea that if you shecht an animal and you find an unborn baby in it, the baby is mutter to eat. On the other hand, we said if the baby had stuck out any limb while it was in the womb, then that limb is treifa. So behema hamakshalelid. So if you have a behema that is having a hard time giving birth, v'hotzi uberis yadoi. So meanwhile, in the course of the birth, the baby stuck out its hand. V'choscha. So let's say you chopped it off right then, because since it's treifa, you're not going to be able to use it anyway. So you chopped it off right then. V'achakach shachatis imoi. Later on, you shechted the mother while the baby was still in the womb. Fine. Habasar tahar. The meat of the mother and of the rest of the baby is all tahar. It did not become tamei by touching that piece. Because in order for it, on the face of it, you could argue it touched it because you had that piece that was outside, it's tummy, and the rest of it touched it. But the point is, it was
the piece.
He cut it off, before they cut it off, they were touching. But nevertheless, though, the mother and the baby are not, one second. The mother is still alive. We just said before that living animals are not metabol trauma. The baby, whether it's alive or dead, doesn't really matter, because either way, the fact that it becomes mutter with the mother's shchita means that it's considered part of her for that purpose. So whether the baby itself is alive or dead, it's also, as far as we're concerned, it's if it's still alive, therefore it's not metabol trauma yet. On the other hand, if it shechted the mother, where then at that point, now it's not alive anymore, now it's able to be mekabel truma, then you cut off that piece that was sticking out, so now you have a problem, now you have, that piece is tome, and it's metame di meat. To what degree is it metame? Habosa maga nevela divir meir. So the mayor says, similar to what we had in an earlier mission in our parak, that a mayor would say that the rest of the meat of the baby and maybe even of the mother is considered tame as if it touched a nevela. In other words, that piece that you cut off is considered nevela. The rest of it was touching it because it was still attached when you shechted the mother. Therefore, the rest of the meat of the baby and maybe of the mother as well. Rashi talks about here versus over there, and Rashi says it slightly differently. Will also become tame. The nevela is an avatruma. The rest of the meat is now a rishon latruma. Provided that you have to have had heksher, of course, but that will deal with in the Gemara where the heksher truma came.
Why is the cloth coming up? Everyone's kosher here.
Because that piece is osur, because that piece is osur to eat, and it's considered eva min achai. It's considered eva min achai, and it's mitame like a nevela. Actually, Rashi says two possibilities over here. One possibility is that the baby is still alive, but that particular piece that stuck out is considered Eiv Menachai, and it has the gene of Tumas Nevela. Or the other possibility, Rashi says, is that you can have that if the baby was found dead inside the mother. Then the Aver is also Nevela, because again, the baby itself, you can argue, could be eaten because it was inside the mother, but the limb itself is considered,
it's stuck out,
so it's not Aver Menachai, because the baby is dead, but it's Nevela. Either way, Aver Menachai or Nevela have the same degree of trauma. They're both an Ava trauma.
So in these two cases, we
so therefore
the difference is between it's stuck before the shechita or after the shechita.
Right. So again, if it stuck it out before the, so again, no. So the difference is not whether it stuck it out before the shechita. If you stuck it out after the shechita, we're not to talk about. Then you're allowed to eat the piece also. There's no nevela, there's no even a chai. No, either way, we're talking about in the two cases in our Mishnah are that it stuck out before the shechita. The difference is one case is you cut it and then you shechted the mother, the other is you shechted the mother, then you cut it. So if you shechted the mother, we're now the mother, and now cut before the shechita, there's no problem.
Right.
cut after the shechita, then you have a problem, because now when you when that piece that was tameh is metameh the rest of the meat that is touching. And Reb Meir says it's metameh to the degree that it's considered the other meat touched in a veil. Give it a meir. The Chum say no. It's true the shchita is not master that particular piece to eat. However, the shchita is effective enough to make it not nevela. Therefore, it has the din of like a trefa that was shechted, and a trefa that was shechted does not have a tumah minatora. It only has a tumah midrabanan, and only when it comes to kosher. So therefore, so they say maga trefa shchuta. The rest of the meat has the status of meat that touched a trefa. At that touched the trefa that was properly shechted. So it's only so it's just a trefa, not an avela. Therefore, midaraisa it won't be tomei at all. And even midrabanan, it's only tomei if we're talking kosher.
Well, the first man we said it is the tummy. I mean, it is tummy.
Yeah.
If you toivel the whole thing, it's okay.
But you can't toivel food.
Oh.
You can't toivel food. So no, once. No, it's not garbage. It just means if it was kodshim, it means that yeah, you have to burn it. If it was cholin, no problem. You can eat tomei cholin. You just have to be midrabanan. You have concepts of there. If you eat food that's tomei midrabanan, you become tomei. So it's fine. If the food is a rishon l'tumah, then if you eat it, then you yourself are going to become tomei and have to go to the mikveh midrabanan. But yeah, and also it can be metamei other food. But yeah,
basically you cut the limb before the shechita,
then you're good.
Then you're good after the shechita.
So then you have some kind of problem. Well, according to the Chachamim, it's not nevela. It's only treif shchita. According to the Meir, it's nevela. According to the Meir, it's
nevela.
Yeah, fine. But we still have to discuss all the things.
Yeah, we just usually have to stick it out.
Yeah.
We have a chance.
Yeah, okay.
Stick it out, doesn't stay out.
Okay.
Pull back in.
Okay, so the Chachamim continues. What makes us say that this aver should be considered like a treifa shchuta? Because they say mamatzinu betreifa. Let's make a binyan av a mamatzinu. We find that with a regular treifa animal, a regular animal that has one of the 18 treifas from the previous perek, if you shechitas it's a harta. But if you shecht it, then it doesn't have tumas nevela anymore.
Oh, that's right. Well,
right. If it was a trefa and you shechted it, you can't eat it, but it's still not tomei nevela anymore. It's still not metame anymore. It's a trefa, fine. Af shchitas behemah tatara ta'aver. So therefore, the Chachamim say, logically, you should argue the same way, that shechting the mother animal should be able to be metahar this aver. So, fine, you can't eat the aver, but you can't eat a regular trefa either, so why should it be any different? Amalahem Reb Meir lo. Reb Meir says, no, that's not a valid comparison. Im tihauta shchitas trefa, oisa. You know why shechting a trefa makes it tahar? Because davar should gufa. Because you're saying the animal itself is a trefa. You shechted the animal itself. You cut its own two simanim. Therefore, fine, you can say that takes away the trumas nevela that it would have otherwise had if it died out of
tahar.
No, that includes, no, once you shechted the simanim, it includes the whole body. But to tire to aver davar shein and gufa, what are you comparing to the aver of a baby that was inside it, which is not part of its guf after all, that you should say shechting the mother should be metaher that? No, Rabbi Meir says, I can't accept that comparison.
You know, part of the body.
If it's part, but it's not part. It's still a baby. It's still, in a certain sense, a separate entity. We made that distinction at the beginning of the parak. We said, for example, that if you cut off a piece of the baby while it was in the womb, and then you shechted the mother, you're allowed to eat it. But if you cut off a piece of the mother and left it inside and then shechted it, you're not allowed to eat it. So we see that there's a difference between gufa and not gufa. So the Meir
said, we said also we had a pasuk saying that the baby was part of the guf.
We didn't have a pasuk saying.
We were talking.
You're talking over Yerachimah. But to a certain extent, yes, but to a certain extent not. The fact that in the previous sugya we were talking all about Tumah Blua and all. The point still remains that Reb Meir is saying there's a difference between the animal itself that you shechted, that you're saying that animal was trefa, so now at least it's not Tumah Nevela. Fine, but to say that the baby that it was carrying, that a piece of that baby that stuck out, which is also Mitzahar Bosa Basada Trefa, to say that the shchita of the mother should be Mitzahar It, that it's not Nevela, I can't accept that, he said. Okay, fine. And continues the discussion like this. For now, we have to ask, we took it as a given. Both the Meir and the Chachamim are taking it as a given that a trefa does become, that a trefa, once you shecht it, even though you can't eat it, it doesn't have too much Nevela. So how do we know that? So let's deal with how we know that point.
If you shecht the trefa, it doesn't have too much Nevela.
How do we know that basic point, which both Reb Meir and the Chum agree to? So on the surface, the Mishnah is just mentioning that just as a by-the-way thing. Since we mentioned that concept, we want to show the derivation of it. Pirush HaMishnah explains this is all part of Reb Meir's argument. He wants to prove Once we establish how we know that a trefa becomes tahor by shchita, then we can see how that would not apply to the limb, to the limb of the uber. Okay, so like this, minayin the trefa sheshchita mitahacha. How do we know b'chlal that if you have a behemoth tref, that's a trefa, and you shecht it, that is not tome, that the meat of it is not matame a person who touches it or carries it. How do we know that basic concept? So like this, you would think. Behemoth tmeya asur b'achila. After all, you have a non-kosher species like a horse is also to eat. Ach trefa asur b'achila, and a trefa is equally also to eat because you have a separate lav for that. Well, you should think they're similar. Ma behemoth tmeya in shchitas matarja. Now, if you were to shecht a horse, it wouldn't matter. The dead body of the horse is still matame, a person who touches it or carries it. The fact that you shechted it makes no difference. So ach trefa lo tatar under shchita. So you would think logically, how can shechting a trefa take away the truma that it would have when it would die? Why should it be any different than a horse?
Since it's a tmeya, the shchita doesn't help.
Just like with a tmeya, it doesn't help. Why should it help with a trefa?
Because a trefa is less than a tmeya.
That's the question. And the answer is, loy, no, that's not a valid comparison, because im amaucha behemoth tmeya, shaloy hoita la shata kosher. Because you can say the difference is that a behemoth tmeya, a horse, never had a shata kosher. There was never any time in its life when shchita would have applied to it. Time of a trefa, shaloy la shata kosher. So how could you compare it to a trefa, which had a shata kosher? There was a time in its life when you could have shechted it and eaten it. So continues the argument, on the other hand, from there itself, from what you just mentioned, you can bring a proof as follows. Harei should know the trefa min abetin minayin, and what happens if an animal is born congenitally trefa? So just for example, you have all the different trefas that we talked about in the previous paragraph. You can have an animal born with those trefas, and it's not going to live 12 months. You could also have, for example, let's say that an animal was born with an extra leg or an extra windpipe or what have you, yeah, where it's also trefa, yeah. So, and yet, if you shecht such an animal, it's also not matame. So minayin, so where are you getting that from? The answer is loy, but still, it's not a valid comparison with a behemoth tmeya. Ima mautib, a behemoth tmeya, shekein en b'mina shchita. Because after all, a behemoth tmeya, a horse, that whole species, there's no such thing as shechting. So therefore, the fact that you shecht... So therefore, shchita of it doesn't make a difference. Toma b'trefa sheyesh b'mina shchita. So how can you compare it to a trefa? Fine, this particular animal was born congenitally trefa, but other ones of the same species are capable of being shechted. Therefore, even with this particular one, the shchita has enough of an effect to take away the truma. Now, once we establish that, then therefore we can say ben shmoinachai. Suppose therefore that if you shecht a mother animal and you find alive in the womb a baby animal was born premature after 8 months. Or in the 8th month or whatever, and it was alive, we're talking about large animals like cattle have the same length of pregnancy as human beings, 9 months. Smaller ones, sheep and goats, are pregnant for 5 months. So here we're talking about with cattle. If you have a premature cow that was born, it has the same gain as a premature baby. It's considered it's not viable. Unless it lives for more than 7 days, we don't consider that's going to be viable.
Today is different.
Different because we have incubators and whatnot. But anyway, so the point is, so if you have a premature cow was born then, and by the way, you have the same thing with a premature sheep or goat if they were born after 4 months, same idea. Ein shchitasim et ha'artos. The din would be, therefore, we could argue, that shechting it would not make it tahor, l'fisha ein b'mina shchita, because that's considered like a separate species, such a thing that was born premature, is considered like a different min, and that min, it's not included in the regular category of buck of a sign. Therefore, shchita wouldn't help. And even if you shechted it, it would still be matame tumas nevela, just like a horse that you shechted.
Even then, we called it a trefa.
Even then, no, the difference is that here, ben shmona is not considered a trefa. A ben shmona is almost like a different species. It's not viable. It's not viable even to a greater degree than a trefa. A trefa at least can live 12 months. This is ordinarily not even going to live in the case of an animal 7 days, or in the case of a human 30 days.
So therefore, the shchita is not matahar.
If you were to take this 8-month baby and shecht it, it would still be Talmud Shumas Nebeka. Okay.